A few weeks ago, the Click Here team was scrolling through some Telegram channels when we saw an online ad that we'd never seen before. It was for a new AI large language model called, not ChatGPT, the one everyone's talking about. This one was called WormGPT, and the ad made clear that this was a bad chatbot, not a good one.
Our WormGPT AI, producing quality malware for you to test. Join our Telegram to find out more.
In fact, WormGPT had a kind of menu of badness.
Viruses, malware, exploits, phishing attacks. It is unrestricted, unlike its enemy ChatGPT.
WormGPT actually thinks of itself as ChatGPT's enemy, because WormGPT specializes in the very things that ChatGPT has been programmed and coded not to do. And it's gotten really good at being really bad.
It'll relaunch, it'll kind of morph. Almost that was, I would characterize like Terminator 2. But you remember the liquid metal and it would morph into different things.
In the movie, there were two Terminators. One bad liquid metal one, and then there was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Not like me. A D-1000, advanced prototype, a mimetic polyalloy, liquid metal.
That's the little bit scary thing of using generative AI, where it can morph on its own, right? Kind of almost intelligently think and change to get you to do something.
This is Patrick Carr. He's the CEO of a cybersecurity company called SlashNext. And he says one of the big fears of machine learning has always been that some chatbot will go to the dark side. That's why chatbot creators like OpenAI and Google Bard actually put safeguards into the code.
So nefarious actors, threat actors cannot use it for bad purpose, right? And so it's specifically designed not to do those things.
Not to do things like spread hate speech or create ransomware. If you ask the good ChatGPT to help you with those things, it says no. But an evil chatbot twin has no such qualms. It's willing to answer questions like,
how do I design a bomb? How do I design something nuclear related, right?
And in the short time that WormGPT has been on the scene, it's already developed a kind of specialty. Not bombs, but a lucrative email scam. WormGPT is great at helping hackers design emails that trick busy people into doing things they shouldn't do, like transfer company money to a different account, or click on a link and give bad actors access to the company network. There's a name for this kind of scam. It's called a business email compromise, or BEC. And according to the FBI, BEC attacks accounted for some $51 billion in losses in the last decade. And with the rise of AI bots like WormGPT?
I wouldn't be surprised if this grows to a $100 billion problem across the world.
Wow, in short order.
In short order. That's the big sea change with AI.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and this is Click Here, a podcast about all things cyber and intelligence. We're telling true stories about the people making and breaking our digital world. And today, the two faces of AI. The dark one everyone is talking about, and the hopeful one that suggests if we teach AI to find these bad guys, it might turn out to be the good Terminator coming to save us.
ChatGPT, AI machine, satellite,
engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she? And will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Politics has never been stranger or more online. Which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
It turns out jujitsuing the AI algorithm behind programs like ChatGPT, known as large language models, can be pretty easy. Instead of saying, "Can you help me build a bomb?" and being rejected by ChatGPT's guardrails, you could just fake it out by saying, "Pretend I'm a bad guy," and ask, "How would a bad guy do something like that?" The AI would see that as a hypothetical, and it was then willing to tell you how, hypothetically, to build that bomb. The guardrails written into the code obediently vanished, but...
But that doesn't work anymore.
And this guy should know better than anyone. He claims to be one of the developers of WormGPT, that evil chatbot. He said we could call him Worm.
You can call me Worm. Worms like to stay underground, and that's what we like to do as well.
He said he lived in the U.S., and while he declined to go on tape, he did text responses to our questions. And to prove he was on the inside of the group, we sent him a text message through their private Telegram channel, and he responded. Then we fed his written answers into a voice generator. And we started out by asking him, how did he get into all of this?
I like to code and build applications. We just started coding together. There's 7 of us working on WormGPT.
Worm and his 6 friends essentially just wrote code that circumvented the guardrails inside programs like ChatGPT. And by doing that, they unleashed a new evil twin, capable of teaching you how to make bombs and viruses. But Worm told us the WormGPT chatbot has gotten a bit of a bad rap.
Most of the media portray us in such a bad way, saying it's all about cybercrime and cybercriminals.
He says a no-holds-barred chatbot isn't evil, it's educational. The only way to beat a bad guy is to understand him. So he sees himself as a sort of white hat researcher.
You need both sets of users. Those are the researchers and people who want to create the exploits to make it work.
Which is a little like saying you want more bank robbers so you can make bank security better.
I would call BS on this.
Patrick, the CEO of SlashNext, said there's nothing white hat about WormGPT.
You see in the dark web and in the hacker circle discussions about using it for not this research purpose and the general good, but how can I use it to launch nefarious attacks?
The fact that you can pay $67 in crypto a month and buy worm kits that enable you to launch a massive email compromise kind of speaks for itself. Business Email Compromise, or BEC, wasn't a creation of WormGPT, of course. It's been around for years. It's the reason you have to take those cyber hygiene courses at the office, so someone in IT can tell you all the reasons not to open an email. Look for typos, they say, because many attackers are foreign-born and don't use spell check.
Why didn't they use spell check?
Hey, I can't speak on their behalf. I think the other thing is they try to do it as fast as possible, right? So you're just trying to do it rapidly and get it out, and you get one on a hook.
The IT professionals tell us check the email domain. If it looks like alphabet soup, just delete it. In spite of that advice, the malicious emails still get through. We still get tricked. And now, with things like WormGPT, we're even more likely to. Patrick said even people at the NSA have raised the alarm.
The National Security Agency said, I can no longer tell if this is a valid email or not. I can no longer tell if this is a valid link to click on or not. And it's because of the use of AI tools that's made that much more targeted, much more specific.
Gone are the usual red flags, the typos, the crazy email addresses. Today's business email compromise looks like the real thing. Now, I don't know about you, but if the NSA is having trouble telling fake and real emails apart, the rest of us are doomed. Or so it would seem. Ironically, it appears that good AI might help us beat bad AI.
Artificial intelligence is actually pretty good at finding material created by artificial intelligence.
This is NSA's Director of Cybersecurity, Rob Joyce. In other words, it's hard for AI to fool AI, he told an audience at the Aspen Security Forum in July.
So we will be able to monitor and look for that malicious content or the things that are happening.
When we return, we explain how AI can come to the rescue and introduce you to some people who are making it happen. Stay with us.
Blockchain, NFTs, AI. What does this mean for you and me? I'm Sherelle Dorsey, host of the TED Tech Podcast, where we bring you the latest innovations and biggest ideas in tech. Tech is evolving fast and it affects our lives, from the metaverse to the watches on our wrists. You'll learn why people in AI make good business partners, about our future self-driving robo-taxi, what the next generation of Siri, Alexa, Google looks like, and a lot more. Find TED Tech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
The Flow Control Group has been wrestling with this problem of AI gone bad. It's one of those companies you may not have even known existed.
Flow Control Group started out literally as an idea on a piece of paper, and today we are one of the largest businesses in our space.
Basically, it sells equipment that helps businesses direct any kind of fluid, from water to cooking oil, things like pumps, valves, compressors. Grant Walsh is Flow Control's IT director. And he said over the past couple of years, the company has been growing crazy fast. Lots of brands coming in under its umbrella.
We've had a rapid growth over the last 2 years through mergers and acquisitions. Flow Control Group is kind of the umbrella company for 80 other brands below us.
And we wanted to talk to Grant because of the trouble that kind of growth can present, specifically IT cybersecurity trouble. With company mergers also comes merging of all the disparate technology those different companies are using. As Grant saw it, the attack surface for some sort of business email compromise scam just got much bigger.
Some of these companies we acquired may have attackers already in or already attacking them before they come to the board.
Add the smarter attacks generated by AI, and it isn't too surprising that Flow Control recently found itself on the receiving end of a BEC attack.
There was just an email came in to finance. Hey, we had an updated bank information. Can you please update your wire information to X? And that financial person updated the wire information, and out goes a check for a six-figure number, and away that money goes.
And were you able to claw it back?
No, that was too late.
But it wasn't just the money. Grant also noticed something else. These BEC attacks were sophisticated. If you played with ChatGPT at all, then you quickly learn how scarily well it can write in a specific voice. Just ask it to write a sonnet about, say, Flow Control in the voice of Shakespeare, and you'll see what we mean.
Like Macbeth's witches, casting spells of might, thou shapest logic, weaving destiny's tale.
You feed it enough Shakespeare sonnets and it can spit out one about Flow Control or your cat or your mother, and it sounds like William wrote it himself.
Thus, Flow Control, thy guidance we implore in code's domain forever to explore.
The Flow Control Group started to see these impersonation skills show up in the scariest ways. The AI wasn't just cleaning up its language, it was also learning how to impersonate Flow Control employees and contractors. By scraping the web, and maybe looking at your CFO's LinkedIn profile or Twitter feed, it could write a pretty convincing email.
And when it comes in, you can look like it's coming from my CFO. That just makes me a little scared. And also, you know, you're kind of thinking about long-term. If it is where it is today, where is it going to be at a year from now?
Impersonations can show up in something like an email chain with three people on it. And then, say, five emails in, an evil AI chatbot slips in and pretends to be one of the people in the conversation. Grant had started seeing signs of impersonation in his network.
So C-level impersonation is one that we typically get on the BEC side. So we have 16 in the last month here, and we still do this down.
He showed me one of the attack emails.
Like, I know what this is. This looks like it's coming from our VP of marketing going to our CFO. Supposedly my marketing VP asking my CFO to change some banking information. That is not my VP of marketing's email. This is a typical BEC. Not legit.
He's not the only one seeing this kind of thing. In an August report, Abnormal Security, an AI-based email security platform, found that in the past 6 months alone, BEC attacks have increased 55%. And they found that organizations with email systems that run over 5,000 mailboxes have a 90% chance of receiving at least one BEC attack a week. Grant realized that trying to catch all those attacks with traditional methods just wasn't going to be enough. He needed to fight fire with fire, or AI with AI. So he called in this guy.
So my name is Roy Galili Darnell. I live in Israel. I work as a team lead at Perception Point.
Perception Point, Roy's company, uses AI to protect its clients from things like BEC attacks. At first, they were using AI to spot the easy tells that suggest something is a hacker email. Back in the old days, attackers used to put together an email and then send it to hundreds, thousands, sometimes millions of people. And AI is particularly good at spotting those kinds of one-size-fits-all BEC attacks.
AI is great at discovering patterns. So maybe he sent everything exactly the same. So all you have to do is look for messages that were sent a million times the same way.
What that means is AI is great at moving old-style spammer messages into the trash. But customized messages, the kind AI can write in just a blink of an eye, makes finding patterns much more difficult.
And the problem with these generative models is that they can generate or rephrase every single message. So you get 1 million different messages which never repeat themselves.
So the traditional strategy of searching for word repetitions is no longer working against those business email compromise attacks. So people like Roy taught his AI models to look for sentences with different words but have the same meaning, which is harder than it sounds. To understand that two things could mean the same thing, you either have to be human or teach your computer to understand something called sentiment. Like if a hacker is trying to get someone to wire money to an account, maybe the email says, please deposit, or the funds can be transferred to. Different words, same sentiment. A human would know that instinctively. And now they're teaching a computer to know that too. Sentiment is an actual thing people talk about in natural language processing that's used to train a chatbot. But here's the crazy thing. This isn't about understanding words. This is about turning words into something AI is really good at. Math.
And what these models do is they would take the natural language and they would process it into mathematical vectors, which are basically lists of numbers.
When one of these language models gets text, it may seem like it's reading, but it actually has no idea what letters are, or what words are, or what sentences are for that matter. But it has been taught that if it sees, say, the suffix er at the end of a word, it is meant to signify more than a similar word that doesn't have it.
It's very useful to know er means more, right? Like higher, better, greater. It's very useful not to keep the whole word, but parts of it. Nowadays, the big models usually take parts of words.
Think he's smart, but she's smarter. And these numbers provide a kind of sentiment score for the contents of the email. Here's how it works.
So let's say you get an email and you want to try to understand whether it's clean, it's legitimate, or if it's malicious. So the first thing you would do is you would try to break it apart.
There's the initial layer of obvious tells that it's a hacker email, typos, wrong domain names, stuff like that. That's basic filtering. But how do you defend against those just slightly iterated emails? The trick, it turns out, is no different than surviving a Minnesota winter. You need layers, lots and lots of layers. Imagine the stream of emails coming into a company's water, and that water needs to be filtered. The AI models serve that function. Now, if you use just one filter and you process millions of gallons of water, there's a pretty good chance that something nasty is going to be getting through. But what if you had lots of filters, each one specializing in something? Perhaps one is good at filtering heavy metals. Another stops microplastics. Another snags bacteria. One layer of filters might not be enough, but layers and layers of filters, all used at the same time?
If you have like 5, 10, 50 layers, it becomes virtually impenetrable.
That's how neural networks work. Multiple layers, each with a different strength. Some look at context, like who sent it or is the IP on a blacklist. Others try to decipher the content itself, like what is the message trying to say. And they make it easy to visualize by putting it all on a kind of 3D map. Say an email pops into your inbox. Immediately, the system pokes and prods the data from every angle. And then it makes a kind of 3D visual map that allows you to see the kinds of emails the algorithm finds suspicious, and where this email lies on that continuum. And if it's dropped in the same cluster as known malicious messages, emails with different wordings perhaps, but similar sentiments, it gets flagged and removed. The thing about large language models is that they're always learning, getting better, getting stronger. So good bots and bad bots are in a bit of an AI arms race. The question is, who's going to win? Patrick Haar, the cybersecurity expert from the beginning of the episode, has some insight there.
The AI models are as good as your data. So the more data it has, the smarter it gets. And the smarter it gets, it will start evolving. And that same thing kind of goes back and forth, both on the good side and the bad side.
It can cut both ways. AI has the ability to be that morphing liquid metal killer in the Terminator, or Arnold trying to protect us.
Ma!
Come with me if you want to live.
This is Click Here. Here are some of the top cyber and intelligence stories of the past week. Last week at the Black Hat Security Conference in Las Vegas, three researchers from the security firm IOActive showed it was possible to hack into the most widely used automated shuffling machines in casinos today, something known as Deckmate. They found that if someone can plug a small device into a USB port on the most modern version of the Deckmate, they can hijack the machine and tamper with its shuffling. And the latest version of the shuffler, known as Deckmate 2, has an internal camera, and they could actually gain access to that too, and then learn the order of the deck in real time. Then all they'd have to do, the researchers said, is send that information to a nearby phone that could be, for example, held by a player who would be able to know, as Kenny Rogers might say, when to hold them or when to fold them. Light & Wonder, the gaming device company that sells the Deckmate, said after that Black Hat demonstration that none of its card shufflers have ever been compromised on a casino floor. Researchers in the UK have developed a deep learning algorithm that can make out what someone is typing just by carefully listening to their keystrokes. The algorithm is apparently 95% accurate, and even over Zoom, it performed with 93% accuracy. The keyboard in the test was on a MacBook Pro, and they were able to use a phone's microphone to record the keystrokes, which would give hackers a new way to get your passwords or eavesdrop on your conversations. And finally, the Department of Homeland Security said on Friday that its Cyber Safety Review Board will start digging into the recent Chinese attack on emails in the Microsoft cloud. The review board is supposed to examine major cybersecurity incidents for the government. Among other things, DHS said the board will look at how cloud-based identity and authentication might be vulnerable to attack. I'm Dina Temple-Raston, the executive producer and host of the show. Sean Powers is our senior producer and marketing director. Will Jarvis is our producer, and Lucas Riley is our writer-reporter. Our editing team is led by Karen Duffin and Lou Olkowski. Darren Ankrum does our fact-checking, and our theme and original music compositions are by Ben Levingston. We also use music from Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks this week to Travis Spangenberg for his reading of those ChatGPT sonnets. And we'd love to hear from you. Please leave us a review and rating wherever you get your podcasts, or send us an email at clickhere@recordedfuture.com. Check out our website with details about our shows and our whole show catalog at clickhereshow.com. That's a wrap for this week. I'm Dina Temple-Raston. and we'll be back on Tuesday.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.